dark. I know Grandma will want to go in with us, and there'll be no one there to feed them. Tell Bill Lowry to come up and take care of the store. You'll find the keys in the usual place.
We'll take care of everything, Papa said. Don't worry about a thing. I don't intend to stop until we get back, because it looks like we're in for some more bad weather. I went over and kissed Grandpa goodbye. He pinched my cheek and whispered,
We'll teach these city slickers that they can't come up here and beat our dogs.
I smiled. Grandpa was carried out and made comfortable in the back seat of Dr. Lathman's car. I stood and watched as it wheezed and bounced its way out of sight.
Well, I'm harnessing the team, Papa said. You take the tent down and pack our gear.
On the back seat of the buggy, I made a bed out of our bedclothes. Down on the floorboards, I fixed a nice place for my dogs. All through the night, the creaking wheels of our buggy moved on. Several times I woke up. My father had wrapped a tarp around himself. Reaching down, I could feel my dogs. They were warm and comfortable. Early the next morning, we stopped for breakfast. While Papa tended to the team, I turned my dogs loose and let them stretch.
We made good time last night, Papa said. If everything goes right, we'll be home long before dark.
Reaching Grandpa's store in the middle of the afternoon, Papa said,
I'll put the team in the barn and feed the stock while you unload the buggy.
Coming back from the barn, he said,
In the morning, I'll go over and tell Bill Lowry to come up and open the store.
Looking around, he said,
It snowed more here than it did where we were hunting.
Feeling big and important, I said, I don't like the looks of this weather. We'd better be scooting for home.
Papa laughed. Sure you're not in a hurry to get home to show off the gold cup? He asked.
A smile was my only answer. 200 yards this side of our home, the road made a turn around a low foothill, shutting our house off from view. Papa said,
You're going to see a scramble as soon as we round that bend.
It was more of a stampede than a scramble. The little one came out first and all but tore the screen door from its hinges. The older girls passed her just beyond the gate. In her hurry, she slipped and fell face down in the snow. She started crying. The older girls ran up, asking for the cup.
Holding it high over my head, I said, Now, wait a minute. I've got another one for you two.
I held the small silver cup out to them.
While they were fighting over it, I ran to the little one. Picking her up, I brushed the snow from her long braided hair and her tear-stained face.
I told her there was no use to cry. I had brought the gold cup to her, and no one else was going to get it. Reaching for the cup, she wrapped her small arms around it. Squeezing it up tight, she ran for the house to show it to Mama. Mama came out on the porch. She was just as excited as the girls were. She held out her arms. I ran to her. She hugged me and kissed me.
It's good to have you home again, she said.
Look what I have, Mama, the little one cried, and it's all mine.
She held the golden cup out in her two small hands. As Mama took the beautiful cup, she looked at me. She started to say something, but was interrupted by the cries from the other girls.
We have one too, Mama, they cried, and it's just as pretty as that one. It's not either, the little one piped in a defiant voice. It's not even as big as mine.
Two cups, Mama exclaimed. Did you win two?
Yes, Mama, I said.
Little Anne won that one all by herself.
The awed expression on my mother's face was wonderful to see. Holding a cup in each hand, she held them out in front of her.
Two, she said. A gold one and a silver one. Who would have thought anything so wonderful could have happened to us? I'm so proud, so very proud.
Handing the cups back to the girl, she walked over to Papa. After kissing him, she said,
I just can't believe everything that has happened. I'm so glad you went along. Did you enjoy yourself?
With a smile on his face, Papa almost shouted,
Enjoy myself? Why, I never had such a time in my life.
His voice trailed off to a low calm. That is, except for one thing, Grandpa had a bad accident.
Yes, I know, Mama said. One of Tom Logan's boys was at the store when they arrived. He came by and told us all about it. The doctor said it wasn't as bad as it looked, and he was pretty sure Grandpa would be home in a few days.
I was happy to hear this news, and could tell by the pleased look on my father's face he was glad to hear it, too. On entering the house, Papa said,
Oh, I almost forgot.
He handed the box of money to Mama.
What's this? She asked.
Oh, it's just a little gift from old Dan and little Ann, Papa said.
Mama opened the box. I saw the color drain from her face. Her hands started trembling. Turning her back to us, she walked over and set it on the mantel. A peaceful silence settled over the room. I could hear the clock ticking away. The fire in the fireplace crackled and popped. Turning from the mantel, Mama looked straight at us. Her lips were tightly pressed together to keep them from quivering. Walking slowly to Papa, she buried her face in his chest. I heard her say,
"Thank God, my prayers have been answered."
There was a celebration in our home that night. To me, it was like a second Christmas. Mama opened a jar of huckleberries and made a large cobbler. Papa went to the smokehouse and came back with a hickory-cured ham. We sat down to a feast of the ham, huge plates of fried potatoes, ham, gravy, hot corn bread, fresh butter, and wild bee honey. During the course of the meal, the entire story of the championship hunt was told, some by Papa, but mostly by me. Just when everything was so perfect and peaceful, an argument sprang up between the two oldest girls. It seemed that each wanted to claim the silver cup. Just when they were on the verge of sawing it in two so each would have her allotted share, Papa settled the squabble by giving the oldest one a silver dollar. Once again, peace and harmony was restored. That night, as I was preparing for bed, a light flashed by my window. Puzzled, I tiptoed over and peeked through the pane. It was Mama. Carrying my lantern and two large plates heaped high with food, she was heading for the doghouse. Setting the light down on the ground in front of it, she called to my dogs. While they were eating, Mama did something I couldn't understand. She knelt down on her knees in prayer. After they had eaten their food, Mama started petting them. I could hear her voice, but couldn't make out her words. Whatever she was saying must have pleased them. Little Ann wiggled and twisted. Even old Dan wagged his long red tail, which was very unusual. Papa came out. I saw him put his arm around Mama. Side by side, they stood for several minutes looking at my dogs. When they turned to enter the house, I saw Mama dab at her eyes with her apron. Lying in bed, staring into the darkness, I tried hard to figure out the strange actions of my parents. Why had Mama knelt in prayer in front of my dogs? Why had she wept? I was running all the whys around in my mind when I heard them talking. "I know," Papa said, "but I think there's a way. I'm going to have a talk with Grandpa. I don't think that old foot of his is ever going to be the same again. He's going to need some help around the store." I knew they were talking about me, but I couldn't understand what they meant. Then I thought, "Why, that's it. They want me to help Grandpa. That would be all right with me. I could still hunt every night." Feeling smart for figuring out their conversation, I turned over and fell asleep. Although the winning of the cups and the money was a big event in my life, it didn't change my hunting any. I was out after the ringtails every night. I had been hunting the river bottoms hard for about 3 weeks. On that night, I decided to go back to the cyclone timber country. I had barely reached the hunting ground when my dog struck a trail. Old Dan opened up first. They struck the trail on a ridge and then dropped down into a deep canyon up the other side and broke out into some flats. I could tell that the scent was hot from their steady bawling. 3 times they treed the animal. Every time I came close to the tree, the animal would jump and the race would be on. After a while, I knew it wasn't a coon. I decided it was a bobcat. I didn't like to have my dogs tree the big cats, for their fur wasn't any good, and all I could expect was 2 cut-up hounds. They could kill the largest bobcat in the hills, and had on several occasions, but to me it was useless. The only good I could see in killing one was getting rid of a vicious predatory animal. The 4th time they treed, they were on top of a mountain.
After the long chase, I figured the animal was winded and would stay in the tree. In a trot, I started to them. As I neared the tree, little Anne came to me, reared up and whined. By her actions, I knew something was wrong. I stopped. In the moonlight, I could see old Dan sitting on his haunches, staring up at the tree and bawling. The tree had lots of dead leaves on it. I knew it was a large white oak because it is one of the last trees in the mountains to lose its leaves. Old Dan kept bawling. Then he did something he had never done before. For seconds, his deep voice was still, and silence settled over the mountains. My eyes wandered from the tree to him. His lips were curled back, and he snarled as he stared into the dark foliage of the tree. His teeth gleamed white in the moonlight. The hair on his neck and along his back stood on end. A low, deep, rumbling growl rolled from his throat. I was scared, and I called to him. I wanted to get away from there. Again I called, but it was no use. He wouldn't leave the tree, for in his veins flowed the breeded blood of a hunting hound. In his fighting heart there was no fear. I set the lantern down and tightened my grip on the handle of the axe. Slowly I started walking toward him. I thought, if I can get close enough to him, I can grab his collar. I kept my eyes on the tree as I edged forward. Little Anne stayed by my side. She, too, was watching the tree. Then I saw them. Two burning yellow eyes staring at me from the shadowy foliage of the tree. I stopped, petrified with fear. The deep baying of old Dan stopped, and again the silence closed in. I stared back at the unblinking eyes. I could make out the bulk of a large animal crouched on a huge branch close to the trunk of the big tree. Then it moved. I heard the scratch of razor-sharp claws on the bark. It stood up and moved out of the shadows onto the limb. I saw it clearly as it passed between the moon and me. I knew what it was. It was the devil cat of the Ozarks, the mountain lion. The silence was shattered by one long, loud bawl from old Dan. I'd never heard my dog bawl like that. It was different. His voice rang out over the mountains, loud and clear. The vibration of the deep tones rolled in the silence of the frosty night, on and on, out over the flats, down in the canyons, and died away in the rim rocks, like the cry of a lost soul. Old Dan had voiced his challenge to the devil cat. There was a low cough and a deep growl from the lion. I saw him crouch. I knew what was coming. My hands felt hot and sweaty on the smooth ash handle of the axe. With a blood-curdling scream, he sprang from the tree with claws outspread and long yellow fangs bared. Old Dan didn't wait. Rearing up on his hind legs, he met the lion in the air. The heavy weight bowled him over and over. He wound up in a fallen treetop. The impact of the two bodies threw the lion off balance. Little Anne darted in. Her aim was true. I heard the snap of her steel-trapped jaws as they closed on his throat. With a squall of pain and rage, the big cat rolled over on his side, dragging little Anne with him. His right paw reached out and curved over her shoulder. Sinews tightened and razor-sharp claws dug inward. With a cry of pain, she loosened her hold. I saw the blood squirting from the deep wound in her shoulder. She ignored it and bored back into the fight. Old Dan, stunned for an instant from the impact of the lion's body, fought his way from the treetop. Bawling the cry of the damned, he charged back in. I went berserk and charged into the fight. There in the flinty hills of the Ozarks, I fought for the lives of my dogs. I fought with the only weapon I had, the sharp, cutting blade of a double-bitted axe. Screaming like a madman, with tears running down my face, I hacked and chopped at the big, snarling mountain cat. Once, feeling the bite of the sharp blade, the devil cat turned on me. His yellow-slitted eyes burned with hate. The long, lithe body dipped low to the ground. The shoulder muscles knotted and bulged. I tried to jump back, but my foot slipped, and I dropped to my knees. I knew I was trapped. With a terrifying scream, he sprang. I never saw my dogs when they got between the lion and me, but they were there, side by side. They rose up from the ground as one. They sailed straight into those jaws of death, their small red bodies taking the ripping, slashing claws meant for me. I screamed and charged back into the fight, swinging my axe, but I was careful not to hit one of my dogs. The battle raged on and on, down the side of the mountain, over huckleberry bushes, fallen logs and rocks. It was a rolling, tumbling mass of fighting fury. I was in the middle of it all, falling, screaming, crying, and hacking away at every opportunity. I had cut the big cat several times. Blood showed red on the bit of the axe, but as yet I had not gotten in the fatal lick. I knew it had to be soon, for my dogs were no match against the razor-sharp claws and the long yellow fangs. The screams of the big cat and the deep, bellowing voices of my dogs echoed through the mountains as if the demons of hell had been turned loose. Down the side of the mountain the terrible fight went on, down to the very bottom of the canyon. The big cat had old Dan by the throat. I knew he was seeking to cut the all-important vein, the jugular. At the pitiful bawl of old Dan, little Ann, throwing caution to the wind, ran in and sank her teeth in the lion's tough neck. With her claws digging into the mountain soil, she braced herself and started pulling. The muscles in her small legs knotted and quivered. She was trying hard to pull the devil cat's fangs from the throat of old Dan. In the rays of a bright Ozark moon, I could see clearly. For an instant, I saw the broad back of the big cat. I saw the knotty bulge of steel-bound muscle, the piston-like jerk of the deadly hind claws trying for the downward stroke that could disembowel a dog. Raising the axe high over my head, I brought it down with all the strength in my body. My aim was true. Behind the shoulders and the broad, muscular back, the heavy blade sank with a sickening sound. The keen edge cleaved through the tough skin. It seemed to hiss as it sliced its way through bone and gristle. I left the axe where it was, sunk to the eye in the back of the devil cat. He loosened his hold on the throat of old Dan. With a scream of pain, he reared up on his hind legs and started pawing the air. Little Ann dangled from his neck, still holding on. Her eyes were shut tight, and her small feet were digging and clawing at the body. Old Dan, spewing blood from a dozen wounds, leaped high in the air. His long red body sailed in between the outspread paws of the lion. I heard the snap of his powerful jaws as they closed on the throat. The big cat screamed again. Blood gurgled and sprayed. In a bright red mist, it rained out over the underbrush and rattled like sleet on the white oak leaves. In a boxer's stance, he stood and clawed the air. His slitted eyes turned green with hate. He seemed to be unaware of the two hounds hanging from his body and kept staring at me. I stood in a trance and stared back at the ghastly scene. The breath of life was slowly leaving him. He was dying on his feet, but refusing to go down. My axe handle stuck straight out from his back. Blood gushing from the mortal wound glistened in the moonlight. A shudder ran through his body. He tried once again to scream. Blood gurgled in his throat. It was the end of the trail for the scourge of the mountains. No more would he scream his challenge from the rim rocks to the valley below. The small, harmless calves and the young colts would be safe from his silent stalk. He fell toward me. It seemed that with his last effort he was still trying to get at me. As his heavy body struck the ground, something exploded in my head. I knew no more. When I came to, I was sitting down. It was silent and still. A bird, disturbed by the fight, started chirping far up on the side of the mountain. A small winter breeze rustled some dead leaves in the deep canyon. A cold, crawling chill crept over my body. I looked over at the lion. My dogs were still glued to his lifeless body. In his dying convulsions, the axe had become dislodged from the wound. It lay there in the moonlight, covered with blood. My numb brain started working. I thought of another time the axe had been covered with blood. I don't know why I thought of Reuben Pritchard at that time, or why I thought of these words I had often heard. There is a little good in all evil. I got to my feet and went over to my dogs. I knew I had to inspect them to see how badly they were hurt. It wasn't too hard to get little Ann to loosen her hold. I examined her body. She was cut in several places, but nothing fatal. The only bad wound she had was in her shoulder. It was 9 inches long and down to the clean white bone. She started licking it immediately. It was different with old Dan. Try as I might, he wouldn't turn loose. Maybe he could remember the night in the cave when he was a pup, how the big cat had screamed and how he had bawled back at him. I took hold of his hind legs and tried to pull him loose. It was no use. He knew that the hold he had was a deadly one, and he wasn't going to let go. I tried to tell him it was all over, that the lion was dead, to turn loose, as I wanted to see how badly he was hurt. He couldn't understand and wouldn't even open his eyes. He was determined to hold on until the body turned cold and stiff. With my axe handle, I pried apart his locked jaws. Holding onto his collar, I led him off to one side. I couldn't turn him loose, as I knew if I did, he would go back to the lion. With one hand, I started examining him. I ran my fingers through the short red hair. I could feel the quivering muscles and the hot, sweaty skin. He was a bloody mess. His long, velvety ears were shredded. His entire body was a mass of deep, raw, red wounds. On both sides of his rib carriage, the sharp claws had laid the flesh open to the bone. His friendly old face was pitiful to see. A razor-sharp claw had ripped down on an angle across his right eye. It was swollen shut. I wondered if he would ever see from that eye again. Blood dripped from his wounds and fell on the white oak leaves. I saw he was bleeding to death. With tears running down my cheeks, I did the only thing a hunter could do. I raked the leaves away and let his blood drip on the Black Mountain soil. Mixing it into a mud, I worked it into his wounds to stop the flow of blood. With my axe in one hand and holding onto his collar with the other, we climbed out of the canyon. I knew if I could get him far enough away from the lion, he wouldn't go back. On reaching the top, I saw the yellow glow of my lantern. I turned old Dan loose and walked over and picked it up. Not knowing exactly where I was, I looked down out of the mountains to get my bearings. Beyond the foothills and fields, I could see the long, white, crooked line of stream marking the river's course. Following the snake-like pattern with my eyes, in no time I knew exactly where I was, for I knew every bend in the river. Anxious to get home so I could take care of my dogs, I turned to call to them. Little Ann was close by. She was sitting down, licking at the wound in her shoulder. I saw the shadowy form of old Dan sniffing around the tree where the lion had been treed. As I stood and watched him in the moonlight, my heart swelled with pride. Wounded though he was, he wanted to make sure there were no more lions around. I called to him. In a stiff-legged trot, he came to me. I caught hold of his collar and gave him another inspection. In the lantern light, I could see the mud-caked wounds clearly. The bleeding had almost stopped. I felt much better. Little Ann came over. I knelt down and put my arms around them. I knew that if it hadn't been for their loyalty and unselfish courage, I would have probably been killed by the slashing claws of the devil cat. "I don't know how I'll ever pay you back for what you've done," I said, "but I'll never forget it." Getting up, I said, "Come on, let's go home so I can take care of those wounds." I hadn't gone far when I heard a cry. At first I thought it was a bird or a night hawk. I stood still and listened. I glanced at little Ann. She was looking behind me. I turned around and looked for old Dan. He was nowhere in sight. The cry came again, low and pitiful. Instantly, little Ann started back the way we had come. I followed as fast as I could run. I found old Dan lying on his side, pleading for help. What I saw was almost more than I could stand. There, tangled in the low branches of a huckleberry bush, were the entrails of my dog. With a gasping cry, I knelt down by his side. I knew what had happened. Far back in the soft belly, the slashing, razor-sharp claws of the lion had cut into the hollow. In my inspections, I had overlooked the wound. His entrails had worked out and had become entangled in the bush. The forward motion of his body had done the rest. He whimpered as I laid my hand on his head. A warm red tongue flicked out at it. With tears in my eyes, I started talking to him. "Hang on, boy," I said. "Everything'll be all right. I'll take care of you." With trembling hands, I unwound the entrails from the bush. With my handkerchief, I wiped away the gravel, leaves, and pine needles. With fingers that shook, I worked the entrails back into the wound. Knowing that I couldn't carry him and the axe and lantern, I stuck the axe deep in the side of a white oak tree. I blew out the lantern and hung the handle over the other blade. I wrapped my dog in my old sheepskin coat and hurried for home. Arriving home, I awakened my mother and father. Together we doctored my dogs. Old Dan was taken care of first. Very gently, Mama worked the entrails out, and in a pan of warm soapy water washed them clean of the pine needles, leaves, and grit. "If I only knew what I was doing," Mama said as she worked, "I'd feel better." With gentle hands, she worked the entrails back through the opening. The wound was sewn up and bandaged with a clean white cloth. Little Ann wasn't hard to doctor. I held her head while Mama cleaned her wounds with peroxide, feeling the bite of the strong liquid. She whined and licked at my hands. "It's all right, little girl," I said. "You'll be well in no time." I opened the door and watched her as she limped off to the doghouse. Hearing a whimper, I turned around. There in the doorway to the room stood my sisters. I could tell by the looks on their faces that they had been watching for some time. They looked pitiful, standing there in their long white gowns. I felt sorry for them.
"Will little Ann be all right?" my older sister asked.
"Yes," I said. "She'll be all right. She only had one bad wound, and we've taken care of that."
"Old Dan's hurt bad, isn't he?" she said.
I nodded my head.
"How bad is it?"
she asked. "It's bad," I said. "He was cut wide open." They all started crying.
"Now here," Mama said, going over, "you girls get back in bed. You'll take a death of cold being up like this in your bare feet." "Mommy," the little one said, "God won't let old Dan die, will he?"
"I don't think so, honey," Mama said. "Now off to bed." They turned and walked slowly back to their room.
"The way your dogs are cut up," Papa said, "it must have been a terrible fight."
"It was, Papa," I said. "I never saw anything like it. Little Ann wouldn't have fought the lion if it hadn't been for old Dan. All she was doing was helping him. He wouldn't quit. He just stayed right in there till the end. I even had to pry his jaws loose from the lion's throat after the lion was dead."
Glancing at old Dan, Papa said, "It's in his blood, Billy. He's a hunting hound, and the best one I ever saw. He only has two loves, you and hunting. It's all he knows."
"If it hadn't been for them, Papa," I said, "I probably wouldn't be here now."
"What do you mean?" Mama said, "you wouldn't be here now."
I told them how the lion had leaped at me and how my dogs had gotten between him and me.
"They were so close together," I said. "When they came up off the ground, they looked just like one."
There was a moaning sigh from Mama. She covered her face with her hands and started crying.
"I don't know," she sobbed. "I just don't know. To think how close you came to being killed, I don't think I can stand any more."
"Now, now," Papa said, as he walked over and put his arms around her. "Don't go all to pieces. It's all over. Let's be thankful and do our best for old Dan."
"Do you think he'll die, Papa?" I asked.
"I don't know, Billy," Papa said, shaking his head. "He's lost an awful lot of blood, and he's a mighty sick dog. All we can do now is wait and see."
Our wait wasn't long. My dog's breathing grew faster and faster, and there was a terrible rattling in his throat. I knelt down and laid his head in my lap. Old Dan must have known he was dying, just before he drew one last sigh and a feeble thump of his tail. His friendly gray eyes closed forever. At first I couldn't believe my dog was dead. I started talking to him.
"Please don't die, Dan," I said. "Don't leave me now."
I looked to Mama for help. Her face was as white as the bark on a sycamore tree, and the hurt in her eyes tore at my heart. She opened her mouth to say something, but words wouldn't come out. Feeling as cold as an Arctic wind, I got up and stumbled to a chair. Mama came over and said something. Her words were only a murmur in my ears. Very gently, Papa picked old Dan up in his arms and carried him out to the porch. When he came back in the house, he said, "Well, we did all we could do, but I guess it wasn't enough." I'd never seen my father and mother look so tired and weary as they did on that night. I knew they wanted to comfort me, but didn't know what to say. Papa tried.
"Billy," he said, "I wouldn't think too much about this if I were you. It's not good to hurt like that. I believe I'd just try to forget it. Besides, you still have little Ann."
I wasn't even thinking about little Anne at that moment. I knew she was all right.
I'm thankful that I still have her, I said. But how can I forget old Dan? He gave his life for me. That's what he did. Just laid down his life for me. How can I ever forget something like that?
Mama said, It's been a terrible night for all of us. Let's go to bed and try to get some rest. Maybe we'll all feel better tomorrow.
No, Mama, I said. You and Papa go on to bed. I think I'll stay up for a while. I couldn't sleep anyway.
Mama started to protest, but Papa shook his head. Arm in arm, they walked from the room. Long after my mother and father had retired, I sat by the fire trying to think and couldn't. I felt numb all over.
I knew my dog was dead, but I couldn't believe it. I didn't want to. One day they were both alive and happy. Then that night, just like that, one of them was dead.
I didn't know how long I had been sitting there when I heard a noise out on the porch. I got up, walked over to the door, and listened. It came again, a low whimper and a scratchy sound. I could think of only one thing that could have made the noise. It had to be my dog. He wasn't dead. He had come back to life. With a pounding heart, I opened the door and stepped out on the porch. What I saw was more than I could stand. The noise I had heard had been made by little Anne. All her life she had slept by old Dan's side, and, although he was dead, she had left the doghouse, had come back to the porch, and snuggled up close to his side. She looked up at me and whimpered. I couldn't stand it. I didn't know I was running until I tripped and fell. I got to my feet and ran on and on, down through our fields of shocked corn, until I fell face down on the river's bank. There, in the gray shadows of a breaking dawn, I cried until I could cry no more. The churring of gray squirrels in the bright morning sun told me it was daylight. I got to my feet and walked back to the house. Coming up through our barn lot, I saw my father feeding our stock. He came over and said, "Breakfast is about ready."
"I don't want any breakfast, Papa," I said. "I'm not hungry, and I have a job to do. I'll have to bury my dog."
"I'll tell you what," he said. "I'm not going to be very busy today, so let's have a good breakfast, and then I'll help you."
"No, Papa," I said.
"I'll take care of it. You go and eat breakfast. Tell Mom I'm not hungry." I saw a hurt look in my father's eyes. Shaking his head, he turned and walked away. From rough pine slabs, I made a box for my dog. It was a crude box, but it was the best I could do. With strips of burlap and corn shucks, I padded the inside. Up on the hillside, at the foot of a beautiful red oak tree, I dug his grave. There, where the wild mountain flowers would grow in the spring, I laid him away. I had a purpose in burying my dog up there on the hillside. It was a beautiful spot. From there, one could see the country for miles, the long, white, crooked line of the river, the tall, thick timber of the bottoms, the sycamore, birch, and box elder. I thought perhaps that on moonlight nights old Dan would be able to hear the deep voices of the hounds as they rolled out of the river bottoms on the frosty air. After the last shovel of dirt was patted in place, I sat down and let my mind drift back through the years. I thought of the old Casey baking powder can, and the first time I saw my pups in the box at the depot. I thought of the $50, the nickels and dimes, and the fishermen and blackberry patches. I looked at his grave, and with tears in my eyes, I voiced these words, "You were worth it, old friend, and 1,000 times over." In my heart, I knew that there in the grave lay a man's best friend. 2 days later, when I came in from the bottoms where my father and I were clearing land, my mother said, "Billy, you had better look after your dog. She won't eat." I started looking for her. I went to the barn, the corn crib, and looked under the porch. I called her name. It was no use. I rounded up my sisters and asked if they had seen little Anne.
The youngest one said she had seen her go down into the garden. I went there, calling her name. She wouldn't answer my call. I was about to give up, and then I saw her. She had wiggled her way far back under the thorny limbs of a blackberry bush in the corner of the garden. I talked to her and tried to coax her out. She wouldn't budge. I got down on my knees and crawled back to her. As I did, she raised her head and looked at me. Her eyes told the story. They weren't the soft gray eyes I had looked into so many times. They were dull and cloudy. There was no fire, no life. I couldn't understand. I carried her back to the house. I offered her food and water. She wouldn't touch it. I noticed how lifeless she was. I thought perhaps she had a wound I had overlooked. I felt and probed with my fingers. I could find nothing. My father came and looked at her. He shook his head and said, "Billy, it's no use. The life has gone out of her. She has no will to live." He turned and walked away. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. With eggs and rich cream, I made a liquid. I pried her mouth open and poured it down. She responded to nothing I did. I carried her to the porch and laid her in the same place I had lain the body of old Dan. I covered her with gunny sacks. All through the night I would get up and check on her. Next morning I took warm, fresh milk, and again I opened her mouth and fed her. It was a miserable day for me. At noon it was the same. My dog had just given up. There was no will to live. That evening when I came in from the field, she was gone. I hurried to my mother. Mama told me she had seen her go up the hollow from the house, so weak she could hardly stand. Mama had watched her until she had disappeared in the timber. I hurried up the hollow, calling her name. I called and called. I went up to the head of it, still calling her name and praying she would come to me. I climbed out onto the flats, looking, searching, and calling. It was no use. My dog was gone. I had a thought, a ray of hope. I just knew I'd find her at the grave of old Dan. I hurried there. I found her lying on her stomach, her hind legs stretched out straight, and her front feet folded back under her chest. She had laid her head on his grave. I saw the trail where she had dragged herself through the leaves. The way she lay there, I thought she was alive. I called her name. She made no movement. With the last ounce of strength in her body, she had dragged herself to the grave of old Dan. Kneeling down by her side, I reached out and touched her. There was no response, no whimpering cry or friendly wag of her tail. My little dog was dead. I laid her head in my lap and, with tear-filled eyes, gazed up into the heavens. In a choking voice, I asked, "Why did they have to die? Why must I hurt so? What have I done wrong?" I heard a noise behind me. It was my mother. She sat down and put her arm around me. "You've done no wrong, Billy," she said. "I know this seems terrible, and I know how it hurts, but at one time or another, everyone suffers. Even the good Lord suffered while he was here on earth." "I know, Mama," I said, "but I can't understand. It was bad enough when old Dan died. Now little Ann is gone, both of them. Gone, just like that." "Billy, you haven't lost your dogs altogether," Mama said. "You'll always have their memory. Besides, you can have some more dogs." I rebelled at this. "I don't want any more dogs," I said. "I won't ever want another dog. They wouldn't be like old Dan and little Ann." "We all feel that way, Billy," she said. "I do especially. They fulfilled a prayer that I thought would never be answered." "I don't believe in prayers anymore," I said. "I prayed for my dogs, and now look, both of them are dead." Mama was silent for a moment, and then in a gentle voice she said, "Billy, sometimes it's hard to believe that things like this can happen, but there's always an answer. When you're older, you'll understand better." "No, I won't," I said. "I don't care if I'm 100 years old. I'll never understand why my dogs had to die." As if she were talking to someone far away, I heard her say in a low voice, "I don't know what to say. I can't seem to find the right words."
Looking up to her face, I saw that her eyes were flooded with tears.
"Mama, please don't cry," I said. "I didn't mean what I said."
"I know you didn't," she said as she squeezed me up tight. "It's just your way of fighting back." I heard the voice of my father calling to us from the house.
"Come now," Mama said. "I have supper ready, and your father wants to talk to you. I think when you've heard what he has to say, you'll feel better."
"I can't leave little Anne like this, Mama," I said. "It'll be cold tonight. I think I'll carry her back to the house."
"No, I don't think you should do that," Mama said. "Your sisters will go all to pieces. Let's make her comfortable here."
Raking some dead leaves into a pile, she picked little Anne up and laid her in them. Taking off my coat, I spread it over her body. I dreaded to think of what I had to do on the morrow. My father and sisters were waiting for us on the porch. Mama told them the sad story. My sisters broke down and started crying. They ran to Mama and buried their faces in her long cotton dress. Papa came over and laid his hand on my shoulder.
"Billy," he said, "there are times in a boy's life when he has to stand up like a man. This is one of those times. I know what you're going through and how it hurts, but there's always an answer. The good Lord has a reason for everything he does."
"There couldn't be any reason for my dogs to die, Papa," I said. "They just couldn't. They hadn't done anything wrong."
Papa glanced at Mama, getting no help from her. He said,
"It's getting cold out here. Let's go in the house. I have something to show you."
"Guess what we're having for supper," Mama said as we turned to enter the house. "Your favorite, Billy. Sweet potato pie. You like that, won't you?"
I nodded my head, but my heart wasn't in it. Papa didn't follow us into the kitchen. He turned and entered his bedroom. When he came into the room, he had a small shoebox in his hand. I recognized the box by the bright blue ribbon tied around it. Mama kept her valuables in it. A silence settled over the room. Walking to the head of the table, Papa set the box down and started untying the ribbon. His hands were trembling as he fumbled with the knot. With the lid off, he reached in and started lifting out bundles of money. After stacking them in a neat pile, he raised his head and looked straight at me.
"Billy," he said, "you know how your mother has prayed that someday we'd have enough money to move out of these hills and into town so that you children could get an education."
I nodded my head.
"Well," he said in a low voice, "because of your dogs, her prayers have been answered. This is the money earned by old Dan and little Anne. I've managed to make the farm feed us and clothe us, and I've saved every cent your furs brought in. We now have enough."
"Isn't it wonderful?" Mama said. "It's just like a miracle."
"I think it is a miracle," Papa said. "Remember, Billy said a prayer when he asked for his pups, and then there were your prayers. Billy got his pups. Through those dogs, your prayers were answered. Yes, I'm sure it is a miracle."
"If he gave them to me, why did he take them away?" I asked.
"I think there's an answer for that, too," Papa said. "You see, Billy, your mother and I had decided not to separate you from your dogs. We knew how much you loved them. We decided that when we moved to town, we'd leave you here with your grandpa for a while. He needs help anyway. But I guess the good Lord didn't want that to happen. He doesn't like to see families split up. That's why they were taken away."
I knew my father was a firm believer in fate. To him, everything that happened was the will of God, and in his Bible he could always find the answers. Papa could see that his talk had had very little effect on me. With a sorrowful look on his face, he sat down and said,
"Now, let us give thanks for our food and for all the wonderful things God has done for us. I'll say a special prayer and ask him to help Billy."
I barely heard what Papa had to say. During the meal, I could tell that no one was enjoying the food. As soon as it was over, I went to my room and lay down on the bed. Mama came in.
"Why don't you go to bed," she said, "and get a good night's sleep. You'll feel better tomorrow."
"No, I won't, Mama," I said. "I'll have to bury little Anne tomorrow."
"I know," she said, and she turned my covers down. "I'll help if you want me to."
"No, Mama," I said. "I don't want anyone to help. I'd rather do it all by myself." "Pilly, you're always doing things by yourself," Mama said. "That's not right. Everyone needs help sometime in his life." "I know, Mama," I said, "but please, not this time. Ever since my dogs were puppies, we've always been together, just us three. We hunted together and played together. We even went swimming together." "Did you know, Mama, that little Ann used to come every night and peek in my window just to see if I was all right? I guess that's why I want to be by myself when I bury her. Now say your prayers and go to sleep. I'm sure you'll feel better in the morning."
I didn't feel like saying any prayers that night. I was hurting too much. Long after the rest of the family had gone to bed, I lay staring into the darkness, trying to think and not able to. Sometime in the night, I got up, tiptoed to my window, and looked out at my doghouse. It looked so lonely and empty, sitting there in the moonlight. I could see that the door was slightly ajar. I thought of the many times I had lain in my bed and listened to the squeaking of the door as my dogs went in and out. I didn't know I was crying until I felt the tears roll down my cheeks. Mama must have heard me get up. She came in and put her arms around me.
"Billy," she said in a quavering voice, "you'll just have to stop this. You're going to make yourself sick, and I don't think I can stand any more of it."
"I can't, Mama," I said. "It hurts so much. I just can't. I don't want you to feel bad just because I do."
"I can't help it, Billy," she said. "Come now and get back in bed. I'm afraid you'll catch cold."
After she had tucked me in, she sat on the bed for a while. As if she were talking to the darkness, I heard her say,
"If only there was some way I could help, something I could do."
"No one could help, Mama," I said. "No one can bring my dogs back."
"I know," she said, as she got up to leave the room. "But there must be something. There just has to be."
After Mama had left the room, I buried my face in my pillow and cried myself to sleep. The next morning, I made another box. It was smaller than the first one. Each nail I drove in the rough pine boards caused the knot in my throat to get bigger and bigger. My sisters came to help. They stood it for a while. Then, with tears streaming, they ran for the house. I buried little Anne by the side of old Dan. I knew that was where she wanted to be. I also buried a part of my life along with my dog. Remembering a sandstone ledge I had seen while prowling the woods, I went there. I picked out a nice stone and carried it back to the graves. Then, with painstaking care, I carved their names deep in its red surface. As I stood looking at the two graves, I tried hard to understand some of the things my father had told me. But I couldn't. I was still hurting and still had that empty feeling. I went to Mama and had a talk with her.
"Mama,"
I asked,
"do you think God made a heaven for all good dogs?"
"Yes," she said, "I'm sure he did."
"Do you think he made a place for dogs to hunt? You know, just like we have here on our place, with mountains and sycamore trees, rivers and cornfields and old rail fences. Do you think he did?"
"From what I've read in the good book, Billy," she said, "he put far more things up there than we have here. Yes, I'm sure he did."
I was thinking this over when Mama came up to me and started tucking my shirt in.
"Do you feel better now?" she asked.
"It still hurts, Mama," I said as I buried my face in her dress. "But I do feel a little better."
"I'm glad," she said as she patted my head. "I don't like to see my little boy hurt like this."
The following spring, we left the Ozarks. The day we moved, I thought everyone would be sad, but it was just the opposite. Mama seemed to be the happiest one of all. I could hear her laughing and joking with my sisters as they packed things. She had a glow in her eyes I had never seen before, and it made me feel good. I even noticed a change in Papa. He didn't have that whipped look on his face anymore. He was in high spirits as we carried the furniture out to our wagon. After the last item was stored in the wagon, Papa helped Mama to the spring seat, and we were ready to go.
"Papa, would you mind waiting a few minutes?" I asked. "I'd like to say goodbye to my dogs."
"Sure," he said, smiling. "We have plenty of time. Go right ahead."
Nearing the graves, I saw something different. It looked like a wild bush had grown up and practically covered the two little mounds. It made me angry to think that an old bush would dare grow so close to the graves. I took out my knife, intending to cut it down. When I walked up close enough to see what it was, I sucked in a mouthful of air and stopped. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. There between the graves, a beautiful red fern had sprung up from the rich mountain soil. It was fully 2 feet tall, and its long red leaves had reached out in rainbow arches curved over the graves of my dogs. I had heard the old Indian legend about the red fern, how a little Indian boy and girl were lost in a blizzard and had frozen to death. In the spring, when they were found, a beautiful red fern had grown up between their two bodies. The story went on to say that only an angel could plant the seeds of a red fern, and that they never died. Where one grew, that spot was sacred. Remembering the meaning of the legend, I turned and started hollering for Mama.
"Mama! Mama!" I shouted. "Come here and hurry, you won't believe it."
In a frightened voice, she shouted back,
"What is it, Billy? Are you all right?" "I'm all right, Mama," I shouted, "but hurry, you just won't believe it."
Holding her long skirt in her hand and with a frightened look on her face, Mama came puffing up the hillside. Close behind her came Papa and my sisters.
"What is it, Billy?" Mama asked in a scared voice. "Are you all right?"
"Look," I said, pointing at the red fern. Staring wide-eyed, Mama gasped and covered her mouth with her hand. I heard her say, almost in a whisper,
"Oh, it's a red fern, a sacred red fern."
She walked over and very tenderly started fingering the long red leaves. In an awed voice, she said,
"All my life I've wanted to see one. Now I have. It's almost unbelievable." "Don't touch it, Mama," my oldest sister whispered. "It was planted by an angel."
Mama smiled and asked, "Have you heard the legend?"
"Yes, Mama," my sister said. "Grandma told me the story, and I believe it, too."
With a serious look on his face, Papa said,
"These hills are full of legends. Up until now, I've never paid much attention to them, but now I don't know. Perhaps there is something to the legend of the red fern. Maybe this is God's way of helping Billy understand why his dogs died."
"I'm sure it is, Papa," I said, "and I do understand. I feel different now, and I don't hurt anymore."
"Come," Mama said, "let's go back to the wagon. Billy wants to be alone with his dogs for a while." Just as they turned to leave, I heard Papa murmur in a low voice, "Wonderful indeed is the work of our Lord." As I stood looking at the two graves, I noticed things I hadn't seen before. Wild violets, rooster heads, and mountain daisies had completely covered the two little mounds. A summer breeze gushed down from the rugged hills. I felt its warm caress as it fanned my face. It hummed a tune in the underbrush and rustled the leaves on the huge red oak. The red fern wavered and danced to the music of the hills. Taking off my cap, I bowed my head. In a choking voice, I said, "Goodbye, old Dan and little Anne. I'll never forget you. And this I know, if God made room in heaven for all good dogs, I know he made a special place for you." With a heavy heart, I turned and walked away. I knew that as long as I lived, I'd never forget the two little graves and the sacred red fern. Not far from our home, the road wound its way up and over a hill. At the top, Papa stopped the team. We all stood up and looked back. It was a beautiful sight, one I'll never forget. As I stood and looked at the home of my birth, it looked sad and lonely. There was no spiral of lazy blue smoke twisting from the rock chimney, no white leghorn hen chasing a June bug, no horse or cow standing with head down and tail switching. I saw I had left the door to the barn loft open. A tuft of hay hung out. It wavered gently in the warm summer breeze. Something scurried across the vacant yard and disappeared under the barn. It was Sammy, our house cat. I heard my little sister say in a choking voice,
"Mommy, we forgot Sammy."
There was no answer. To the left, I could see our fields and the zigzag lines of rail fences. Farther down, I could see the shimmering whiteness of the tall sycamores. My vision blurred as tears came to my eyes. The sorrowful silence was broken by my mother's voice. She asked,
"Billy, can you see it?"
"See what, Mama?" I asked.
"The red fern," she said.
My older sister spoke up.
"I can see it," she said.
Rubbing my eyes, I looked to the hillside above our home. There it stood, in all its wild beauty, a waving red banner in a carpet of green. It seemed to be saying,
"Goodbye, and don't worry, I'll be here always."
Hearing a sniffling, I turned around. My three little sisters had started crying. Mama said something to Papa. I heard the jingle of the trace chains as they tightened in the single trees. Our wagon moved on. I have never been back to the Ozarks. All I have left are my dreams and memories, but if God is willing someday, I'd like to go back, back to those beautiful hills. I'd like to walk again on trails I walked in my boyhood days. Once again, I'd like to face a mountain breeze and smell the wonderful scent of the red buds and pawpaws in the dogwoods. With my hands, I'd like to caress the cool white bark of a sycamore. I'd like to take a walk far back in the flinty hills and search for a souvenir, an old double-bitted axe stuck deep in the side of a white oak tree. I know the handle has long since rotted away with time. Perhaps the rusty frame of a coal oil lantern still hangs there on the blade. I'd like to see the old home place, the barn and the rail fences. I'd like to pause under the beautiful red oaks where my sisters and I played in our childhood. I'd like to walk up the hillside to the graves of my dogs. I'm sure the red fern has grown and has completely covered the two little mounds. I know it is still there, hiding its secret beneath those long red leaves. But it wouldn't be hidden from me, for part of my life is buried there too. Yes, I know it is still there, for in my heart I believe the legend of the sacred red fern.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls. Text copyright 1991 by Sophie S. Rawls, trustee of the Rawls Trust. Production copyright 1997, Random House, Inc., all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.